My name is Tyler Burton. I'm 32 years old. Today is March 9th, yes. 2019. And I'm speaking with Elizabeth Osborne Dameron, who is my wife's grandmother. We're recording this interview in Abilene, Texas. And so just pick up where you left off about going to school in Vermont and all kinds of things.
My name is Elizabeth Dameron, and we left off with my leaving high school in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and going to the University of Vermont in Burlington, Vermont to go to school. I selected Vermont because I had gotten a list of colleges from the American Chemical Society. They made a list of colleges where if you graduated, you were automatically accepted for membership. They had, as it were, approved courses for a degree in chemistry. I applied to Tufts, that was also on the list, Tufts being in Massachusetts, and the University of Vermont. I selected those two because I did not want to be visited on an ad hoc basis by either one of my parents who were moving towards what eventually became a divorce. I wanted to get away from home. And the best way to get away from home in those days before interstate highways was to put the city of New York in between me and them, because nobody ever wanted to drive through New York. So I only looked at schools in New England. Vermont's campus was absolutely gorgeous, which was my principal reason for going there, besides the American Chemical Society. My freshman year, I had a professor named Richard Inskeep, who became a lifelong friend of my mother, no doubt. That was because various things happened, she got introduced to Maggie and Dick, and so they became lifelong friends. He was there at Vermont the whole time I was there. He eventually wound up being head of the department in the University of Hawaii, but that's a whole different story. After 4 years at Vermont, I was looking for a job. I was looking for a job because I could not decide on graduate school. I was being urged to go to graduate school in chemistry. I didn't know whether I might go to graduate school in library science. So I got myself a job at DuPont in the explosives division in Gibbstown, New Jersey. If you ever walk onto a manufacturing operation and you see large tubes coming down from the second and third floor of buildings, do not go to work there. Those are escape tubes for people who have suddenly made a mistake and have time to realize it and get out of the building before it blows. Huh. Mostly at that facility, they made blasting caps, but they did also make small bombs. They had a testing lab away from the library. And one afternoon in the 13 months and 13 days that I worked there, who's counting, suddenly I'm standing at the filing cabinet and I look up out of the window and flop, flop, flop come a whole bunch of gangplanks, bow gangplanks. And over those gangplanks come firemen in full gear looking for the injuries. They were carrying stretchers and they were looking for the injured. What had happened was the guys in the lab had scheduled a test explosion. There was a well out behind the library, and the test explosion, the test area had walls around about 12 foot high, and the well went down, so there was maybe 20, 25 feet of blast containment, but it was open to the sky. And they had to get weather approval in order to set off an explosion. And this day they'd gotten weather approval about 10 o'clock in the morning. And then they'd had difficulty and they did not set off the explosion until about 4 in the afternoon. Well, closer to 3, yeah, because people hadn't started change shift yet. It was before 3 in the afternoon. In the meantime, a cloud cover had come over. So when the explosion went, it went up, and instead of just blowing up into the air, as it would have done if they had set off the bomb at 9:30, it hit the cloud level and bounced back in a circle, breaking windows at the Philadelphia Naval Yard breaking windows all over the area, just in the perimeter. It bounced back in a very narrow band, completely circling the well. So they knew where the explosion had come from, and having broken all those windows in the Navy Yard, they figured, well, this is a massive explosion. And so every fire boat in the Camden and Philadelphia port arrived to deal with.
Wow.
That was everybody was very red-faced, and the rules changed so that they had to get permission for setting off explosions within half an hour of setting off their explosion from then on. The only other thing exciting happened during my period there was that I, being able to read German, most of the people in the library read French. I didn't. I read German. I'd had 3 years of German in high school and 4 years of German in college, which means I couldn't speak it, because in the United States people don't learn spoken languages, they only learn written languages. But there was a new employee there, and he was looking at using explosives for what eventually became fracking, I understand now, for using explosives for that. All work at that point had been done by the Dutch, because they were already using it in Indonesia. So underwater stuff in Indonesia. So all the patents and everything were in Dutch. So the two of us sat together, and I read the language, and he read the geology and engineering. So we spent a couple of hours a day doing that. So by the time I left DuPont, I could read Dutch pretty well. Dutch is very similar to German, and the language is, and the framing of the sentences is the same, the words in Cajun, but most of the words were technical.
Right.
So they didn't need to be translated.
Right.
You don't need to translate aniline and acid and that sort of thing. It's all technical. So that was my expertise there. By the time we got to late October, I started work, graduated probably Memorial Day, started work in the middle of June. By the time we got to the middle of August, I had decided that if some of these guys who were working here can get PhDs, I don't see why I can't get one. So I decided, all right, I would go back to graduate school and get myself a PhD. And I thought to myself, you did 3 years of German in high school and 4 years of German in college, and you know absolutely no French. When you get to graduate school, you're going to have to pass a comprehensive exam in both German and French. German's not a problem, but the French is going to be, because you don't know diddlies from squat. So I hied myself up to Rutgers, South Jersey in Camden, and I said I would like to enroll in a French course. And they said, that's fine, where'd you graduate from high school? And I told them, they said, prove it. And I said, well, I graduated from college too. And they said, prove it. And I said, duh. So after discussion with the head of the registration department, he kept saying, well, don't you have anything like a little, it turns out Rutgers printed little cards that people, telling people their name and their graduating year and that sort of thing. Vermont didn't do that. Finally, I said to him, yesterday, I received in the mail a statement from the American Chemical Society saying that having graduated from an approved course, I was eligible to join. If I would simply send in my dues, I'd be a member. He said, fine, bring it. So I dashed home, and the next night I dashed back to Rutgers, South Jersey, and I said, here's my thing, my invitation for the ACS. And they said, fine, we'll enroll you in this course in French. And I said, okay, in the meantime, since I'm gonna drive up here twice a week to go to a French course, I have time, you know, between work end and the course starting. I guess it didn't start until the second. They ran two courses a night. You could take two courses a night.
Six and eight,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So I signed up for a course in modern American poetry, because it was available at six, before the French at eight. So, okay, so that took up my Tuesday and Thursday. So I went up to class, and I went to the French course, and it was a very small class. There was probably French courses, probably 10 people, and two of them were obviously a couple. And then I went to the French class. French class, we were seated alphabetically. So I, being an O, I was like in the third row. And there was this idiot in front of me who could wiggle his ears. And every time I was called upon to recite, he would wiggle his ears. And it was, he was hysterical, absolutely hysterical. And so I would giggle. I was going to flunk if he kept that up. Anyway, turned out the couple in French had said to me, why don't you join us for coffee? I was to forget whether it was before the 6 o'clock or between the classes or what. So I said, sure, why not? Turns out they were carpooling with this idiot who sat in front of me in French class. So we went to coffee, and then we had we went to New Hope, Pennsylvania, the four of us, and wandered around. New Hope was an art colony in those days, probably still is. We wandered around there, and we did thus and so, and then I took him home with me, and he conned my father into cleaning crabs for him. He pretended he really couldn't quite grasp how to clean a crab, so Papa cleaned the crabs for him. He was very good at conning people that way. And anyway, we dated and all that sort of thing. And then I went to, in the meantime, having now started French.
Dating the idiot.
Yeah, and they started dating the idiot, right. I tied myself up to the University of Vermont and said, okay, I've decided you guys were right. I should go to graduate school. And they all looked at each other and they said to me, did you take the graduate record exam? And I said, no, I wasn't planning on going to graduate school. So they looked at each other and they say, where can we get her in? So somebody said, well, Brown doesn't require the GRE. So they said, okay, let's get her into Brown. It turned out that two out of the five guys who were in the chemistry department at that point had postdoced at Brown. So so they got me into Brown. I never took the graduate record exam because Brown didn't require it. I didn't apply anywhere else. It just, Brown just sent me the paperwork and said, fill this out and you're accepted. And they gave me a teaching assistantship. So I could afford to go. You know, that was my tuition and a small stipend. And so I, you know, got myself all organized to go up to Providence and attend Brown University and all that sort of good stuff. Applying for the PhD, the Brown didn't accept candidates for a straight master's degree. They accepted candidates for a Master of Arts in Teaching, chemistry or physics.
Yeah.
Or math, but they didn't accept a master's degree in sciences if you were just applying for getting a master's degree. So I got organized to go up to Brown and told the people at work that I was going to do this. It was funny. When I applied, in those days you could do this sort of thing. When I applied, one of the reasons I went to graduate school was the head of the library was the only man in the library. He was a lawyer. Didn't have a degree in library science. He had a degree in law and in patent law because the library did all the patent work. That's why I wound up reading Dutch patents. And he flat out said, well, you know, we staff the library with women and there's always a high turnover. We don't expect you girls to stay more than 3 years because people get married, they get pregnant, whatever, and then they leave. And I said, oh, well, it's okay, fine. And working there, I also observed that some of the female engineers, the engineers went to work in the plant, in the analytical lab. And then as they got seniority in the analytical lab, they were moved into the plant. And that's how engineers got promoted through the system, except that the women never got moved into the plant. The women got stuck in the analytical lab for the rest of their professional lives. So one observed this, and one said, that's one of the reasons one decided one would go to graduate school. Anyway, they hired three girls fresh out of college when I got there. I went in with two of them. I started in the middle of June. The other two didn't start till September. They took the summer off. One of them was married. Her husband was working on a master's degree at the University of Pennsylvania, so she was the sole support from the two of them. We went over to Wanamaker's. She was going to buy maternity clothes because she got pregnant. So she was going to quit because she was pregnant while he was still in graduate school, okay? We went over to Wanamaker's and we applied for credit cards, Wanamaker's credit cards. They gave her one. She was the sole support. She was pregnant. He was a graduate student. They wouldn't give me one because I wasn't married.
Yep.
I never went back into Wanamaker's. I never even used Wanamaker's to cut through between the Walnut Street Theater and the parking lot where I parked my car when I went to the Walnut Street Theater. I walked around the corner in the middle of the winter. I was not going to go through Wanamaker's ever again. Yep. So there.
And is it even a thing?
I don't think so.
Nowadays it isn't a thing. Times have changed, but
well, they weren't giving women credit cards because they weren't married.
So. Yeah, if you weren't married, you didn't get a credit card of any kind, except what was then Esso. Esso sent credit card applications to every single bachelor's degree graduate who every year in June they sent out these massive introductory credit cards to every single person who graduated in engineering, chemistry, physics, or math. Everybody got a credit card. That's the only credit card I had. I could buy, and in those days, the only thing you could buy was gas.
Yeah.
You know, you could only buy Esso products, but at least you could buy a spare tire or gas or whatever. Yeah. So I was an Exxon fan even after it became Exxon. So anyway, there we are. I went off to Providence in the middle of August, and the idiot with the funny ears went up to Cornell because his term in the Air Force had been up, and he had extended for a couple of 6 weeks, 2 months, so that he wouldn't be unemployed before the semester started at Cornell. And we wished each other a happy life. And off we went, and we exchanged Christmas cards. And then I got a letter from him saying, this is now 3 years later, I went home over 4th of July, and when I got back, there was a letter from him saying that he had taken a summer job at American Can. Continental Can. In Elizabethport, yeah, whatever, and he would be there all summer, and would, you know, how about we got together? And I wrote back. This is, of course, before cell phones and, you know, before computers. I wrote back and said I'd already been home for vacation, but I was going back home at Labor Day, and because school in those days didn't start till the Monday after Labor Day Monday, I was going home for Labor Day. And maybe we could get together at that point if he was still going to be in wherever it was, Hackensack or whatever. So he wrote back and said yes, and we made arrangements that we would meet in Pennsylvania Station on that Friday night of Labor Day weekend, or I guess Saturday night of Labor Day weekend. And I took the bus down to, where's Yale? To Yale, wherever Yale is. I spent the night with Dave and Corrine DePatie, who had both gotten bachelor's degrees and master's degrees, she in chemistry and he in physics. And they were both working on, she on a master's degree and he on a PhD in the physics and chemistry at Yale. And I told them that I thought I would marry him. They thought that was odd because I hadn't seen him in 3 years. But anyway, so we got to Pennsylvania Station. Pennsylvania Station in those days was beautiful. It wasn't the little hole in the ground that it is now. It was a great big classical building. And there was a lovely bar overlooking the main concourse. So that's where we met. And I said to him, before we make plans for the evening or whatever, I have to tell you, my mother wants to invite you for dinner on whatever, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, whatever. And he said, okay, fine. And I said, well, before you say okay, so, you know, my parents finally got their divorce finalized, and mother is afraid that because of all the business over her divorce, my brother and I will not wish to get married. My brother has, you know, went away, I had with getting married last June, and he's married. Now she's worried about me. So her reason for inviting you for Thursday for dinner on, it was either Tuesday or Thursday, I don't remember, is that she thinks it would be nice if we got married. She has picked you out as a son-in-law. And he said, that sounds like a good idea. So I got on the phone and I told Mother he was going to come to dinner and we would get married the following June. And it was all settled. So then we went and had dinner someplace. All I remember about was it was a steakhouse. We got steaks and then they said, would you like dessert? And we were both hungry. Neither one of us, had lunch. So we said, yes, we'll have dessert. And we had the super deluxe hamburgers for dessert. They thought we were a little peculiar, but we were meat eaters. And then we went up to Central Park, and we went to Shakespeare in the Park, and they were playing The Taming of the Shrew. So that sort of settled our whole thing.
She's not tameable. The trip there didn't take at all because we saw the play in the park, and she's proved only in the last 50-odd years that she's totally untrainable or tameable.
We have, in the last 50-odd years, seen Taming of the Shrew probably over 20 times, and I'm still not trainable.
I've seen it a couple times with them. Oh, that's hilarious.